You're listening to Driving Law, a podcast by Kyla Lee about all things related to the rules of the road.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Driving Law. I am Kyla Lee at Acumen Law, and with me, my co-host, Paul Doroshenko.
Glad to be with you, Kyla.
Are you? Today's been a stressful day.
You know, it's funny. Monday was a big, long day for me. I was in court all day. I conducted an IRP hearing. I had three matters that I resolved in court in North Vancouver.
All successful,
and I won the IRP hearing, too. But at the end of the day, I was like, tired, obviously, pleased with the way that everything turned out. And I had the same feeling that you get when you win a trial, right?
Yeah, the depression.
First you win the trial and you feel great. And then afterward you have the depression sets in. Yeah. And, here I am on 24 years of doing this. And one still has imposter syndrome, despite the fact that, you know, you're the one in the courtroom who knows more about these types of files than anybody else in the courtroom, right? And it's a funny thing. So I've gone through royal.
I get that imposter syndrome.
You don't.
I get it differently.
You don't get the imposter syndrome that most people get.
I get the, am I not doing enough imposter syndrome?
Yes. And you're doing too much. And most.
Everyone says, Kyla, you're doing too much.
Yes.
Too extra.
Yes. But, you know, like if I have downtime, I get depressed. And so I have that, you know, uptime that's so much, it's not manic. It's not that I'm on top of the world or something like that. But, you know, the next day, you got the correction.
Well, let's dive into this podcast because there's lots to talk about.
Always is.
I wanted to start by talking. You mentioned Tesla stock going down.
Yes.
And I when you said it, I think I furrowed my brow and crinkled my nose and thought, how is this driving law? But then you started to explain, and the driving law related issue is not one that is actually that far removed from this theory you have about Tesla stock. So please tell us your Tesla stock going down theory.
Well, it does require a little bit of, you know, it's a complex thing, right? Tesla, you know, introduced their vehicles, and their vehicles were quite advanced, and there was certainly a market for it. There was a latent market of people who are early adopters who couldn't wait to get in there. And they saw these vehicles and they were excited and enthusiastic about them. And then when they were confirmed that they were, you know, good vehicles and nice to drive, and a lot of people really loved driving them, that was easy to get that market of early adopters and some market after that. But there is a limit to that, right? Like there's a point, I'm not buying a Tesla because I live in a 120-year-old house, right? And that is a pretty common thing because you don't want to upgrade the power system. So there's limits for that. And then it becomes an issue of you're selling replacement cars. And replacement cars, there's a limit for that. But there's another factor. I mean, I think some people have probably, I'm assuming I studied economics, some people have worked that part out. So Teslas are known to be the most common vehicles in accidents. This has only recently come out. And I've been talking to people who work in body shops. We know that there's lots of Tesla accidents, right? Teslas, there's probably as many Teslas as Corollas on the road. And you don't see that many Corollas in accidents, but very often you see Teslas in accidents. And one of the things about it is that body shops don't want to repair them. There's a reason for that. They don't want to be spied on by Elon Musk with cameras in the device, in the vehicle. They don't want it to burst into flames while they're working on it.
Sorry, do you think Elon Musk is actually sitting there in his living room?
Well, it's not just Elon Musk. It's the people who own the vehicles have access to that. So they don't want to be spied on by the vehicle.
I know, but I just had this like image of Elon Musk in his underwear watching repair videos, eating a bag of potato chips.
Sure, but I get that too. I mean, the point is they don't want Tesla to be able to monitor what they're doing.
I know.
Car. And they're worried, what if the battery is moved and they can't tell that it's moved a millimeter and it leads to a short and the thing burns? You know, there's all sorts of liability concerns about repairing them that they don't want to get involved with the repairs for them. And there's a lot that was in the news a little while ago that was filled with little slightly damaged Teslas right near the Tesla sales place on 4th here in Vancouver. Well, one of the reasons is people don't want to get them repaired. And and insurance companies don't want to, body shops don't want to repair them. Insurance companies are writing them off when they're in accidents. And that's a huge, huge concern. And of course, the insurance companies are looking at their risk and thinking to themselves, we got to charge more money.
Sure.
And so Tesla's stock problem.
CBC doesn't charge more just for a Tesla.
Well, are they going to in the future, though? When a Tesla's been in an accident, you know, and I know tow yards are reluctant to have them sitting there because they're worried they're going to light on fire. They have to put them distance from other vehicles during that time. Mm-hmm. Which body shops repair them? I mean, obviously, that's an opportunity for somebody in the body shop industry to create a shop that repairs Teslas. It's also an opportunity for Tesla. But these are other hurdles that are impediments to people making that buying decision with a Tesla. And Elon Musk is out there saying, well, we got new models coming out. That'll turn our stock around. I think it's more than that.
So this is fascinating because this actually relates to something that I was getting in an argument with Vision Zero people on Twitter about. And, you know, whenever I get in an argument with Vision Zero, it's me against a horde of people who cannot be reasoned with.
The cycling community.
They call themselves Vision Zero now, Paul, because they just want to see zero accident deaths. But if you start to explain to them that some accident injuries and deaths are unavoidable, there is no common sense situation in which there can be zero traffic accidents ever. They do not
because of
that.
Human frailty or, yeah, you know, design of the streets, unless you're going to make plastic tubes for people to walk in.
Or design of the vehicles.
Yes.
And you think about Tesla and how many incidents we've seen since Teslas became as prevalent as Toyota Corollas with Teslas malfunctioning and driving into shit, mostly buildings.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that Teslas do very well in a collision. Right?
Sure.
You know, the occupants
right
are
through the window of buildings.
The occupants are quite safe. They tend to avoid collisions, but why do they have more collisions than other vehicles? You know, I don't know what's going on there. I suspect it's people overly relying on the self-driving features, but, you know, I've been told that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. But I thought of situations where, you know, we've heard lots of cases where people are driving Teslas, they've never driven a Tesla before, and as they're driving the Tesla, they mix up because they, for whatever reason, messed with the design of the brake pedal and gas pedal that you would normally use and have one unified pedal inside the Tesla.
Did not notice that.
Yeah, and so it was causing all these accidents because people would be confused and either reverse their Tesla inadvertently into buildings or drive their Tesla forward when they were attempting to brake. And it was a big problem. But there were also all sorts of incidents, and I believe even a recall of Teslas that were just kind of accelerating into things on their own.
Well, years ago when GM introduced this platform that they intended to use that they've never actually used and they still talk about it, this is decades ago, it was drive-by-wire. Rather than using hydraulics for the brakes, it was going to be a sensor that actuates hydraulics for the brakes, I suppose. And instead of having a steering column that's a metal shaft going down and turning on a rack and rack and pinion steering, it was going to be motors and sensors. And they haven't done it, but Tesla did. Of course, Airbus did, and so did Boeing. And controls have not been a problem for both of those companies. I mean, there was one recent story about a 787 that just lost all of its function electrical recently. But, you know, for the most part, those things have been pretty reliable. But Tesla took it a little bit further, and it will shake some confidence. But I really suspect that insurance companies are going to have to look at the cost of insuring a Tesla versus other cars. Maybe it's that super acceleration. Maybe it's just that people who buy Teslas think that they're, you know, because they're lousy drivers, they'll be safer in a Tesla. I don't know what the issue is, but it's going to affect Tesla's stock in an ongoing situation. And it's a problem that we have with our clients with Teslas.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there you go. Teslas and Vision Zero are not that far apart. Now, I did want to comment here that Vision Zero was challenging me on this recent case that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the clip of the car that crashed into the window of a dental office on like Hornby Street, downtown Vancouver.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So
it's kind of car.
Gray one.
Oh, okay.
Gray color.
Yeah. It was not a Tesla, but it went through the window of this dental office, and all these people on the internet were jumping to, oh my gosh, you know, speed. If you weren't speeding, this wouldn't have happened, or blah, 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 right? But they have no idea what happened. And I commented in to say, there are a lot of accidents, especially accidents into buildings, that occur because of either medical emergencies that happen with the driver, where the driver loses control of the vehicle, and that can never, ever be accounted for. Like, we can't stop people from being behind the wheel and having a medical emergency that couldn't be prevented or anticipated. Aneurysms, strokes, seizures, heart attacks.
A week ago, I was cutting up some hot peppers.
That doesn't...
Hours after I cut up the hot peppers, I touched my eye while driving, the edge of my eye, just the edge. I'd washed my hands a half dozen times, and I lost vision in that eye.
My other eye
does not have good vision. I had to pull over. That was a medical emergency. It was a medical emergency.
Yeah, but you touched your eyes after cutting hot peppers. That's on you.
Afterwards.
Vision zero, Paul. No more hot peppers.
Hot pepper defense is no defense, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So, but I then looked into some statistics, and we don't keep track of these statistics in British Columbia, but in the United States, there's a general consensus among researchers, and they don't have great data on it because of like state data collection methods and police enforcement collection methods and et cetera, et cetera. But it's estimated and general consensus across the United States is that the number of traffic accidents that are caused by an unanticipated medical emergency, like a heart attack, seizure, stroke, aneurysm, that type of thing, while behind the wheel, is about 20% of all accidents.
Huh.
A huge number.
That's huge. And but it doesn't fit within their narrative, right?
No. And the Vision Zero people say, well, why don't we do more screening of drivers? Like, oh yeah, we're just going to brain scan everybody who has a driver's license on a weekly basis to make sure there's no lurking aneurysms. Like, I'm sorry, we already have an overburdened medical system. This sounds really terrible to say.
Cardiac arrest.
In order to have cars in our society, we have to accept that there will be some deaths. In the same way that in order to have peanut products in our grocery stores, we have to accept that there's going to be some anaphylactic shock. Like, the life cannot exist without risk.
Which, I wonder about the anti-vaccine people. How all of these people have a different attitude. I'm just saying there is risk, and you know, it's inevitable that there is risk. It's just, you've got to pick a level that's reasonable.
Yeah. And we did that in COVID, right? We had mask mandates, but we didn't have a complete lockdown. We had, you know, stay at home orders and restaurant closures for some industries, but we did not have like a total ban on going outside and using parks and recreation and things like that. We had some level of risk at the most important times, and we slowly expanded our capacity for risk while recognizing that there were going to be some consequences associated.
But there were still people who were like, the ventilation systems in schools are still not up to it, and schools need to be masked and kids 8 meters apart from each other.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to all of those concerns, but you have to recognize that at some point you also have to be reasonable.
Now, car manufacturing defects also, or unanticipated mechanical issues, like not mechanical issues from not looking after your vehicle, but a sudden mechanical failure.
Sure.
2% of all accidents in the United States.
I had one where a steering wheel came off. Our client swerved and drove into a business.
We had a different one where somebody drove into a building where they had a problem with the car randomly accelerating, ghost acceleration.
Yeah, that's happened.
We had another one of those. That's the one I was thinking of last night, but I thought that was, I think we're thinking about the same one, and one of us is confusing our circumstances.
Ours had a recall that I found the recall, and the recall was that the steering wheel would slide off the shaft. You're driving along, and well, it would still be on the bolt, but it would no longer have a connection to the spline. And so you're trying to steer, and it's just deciding to go on its own.
Why does that feel like a scene out of like Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway at Disneyland?
yes, that would make sense. It wouldn't be quite as much fun as that ride, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I know I had cars where I unbolted and rebolted the steering wheel back on for the purpose of getting it aligned with the way that the car drove, you know, old cars, Triumph Spitfires and Volkswagen Beetles and things like that. And, you know, I wouldn't put the nut back on there until I got it right. But this was one that just came off. And that does happen. Like, these mechanical defects will happen.
Yeah. I mean, there are approximately 45,000 car accidents a year attributed to a mechanical defect or manufacturing error in the United States. We don't have data for Canada. It's not collected. But that's the data for the United States. And I find that interesting because people are far more willing to cancel their flight if they find out they're on a Boeing plane than cancel driving down the road, which I think generally speaks to society's tolerance for some level of risk, a much higher level of risk of getting in a car accident than having your Boeing fall from the sky.
I found myself in a TikTok loop where I get mechanics who are showing cars that have been brought into their shops.
Good God.
Where things are so rusted out, you know, the brake, the brake rotor has been split in half and is missing half. Part of the suspension is detached from the body because it's rusted through. The tires are showing the tread is completely gone and are showing some of the binding inside of it. And people refuse to believe the mechanic and get angry and drive out. So those people probably wouldn't get on a 787 necessarily, or a 737 rather, but they're willing to drive down the road in their minivan that's got the suspension detached from the frame rail.
Well, all that talk about car accidents, Paul, it makes me think that it's time for a McGracken moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, let loose the law and justice, Kraken! Eric McGracken!
Welcome to the McGracken Moment. Last week, ICBC got ordered to pay over $400,000 to a widow. Her husband died in a motorcycle accident in 2022. At the time of the crash, they were living separately. ICBC said because they were living separately, they didn't have to pay the death benefit to the widow. Now, when the widow gave a statement to ICBC, she mentioned that they were living separately, but she also mentioned that it was not meant to be a permanent separation. It was temporary. They were working things out in their marriage. But ICBC just took the beginning of that statement. ICBC said, "You're living separately, therefore you're not spouses." Well, the widow brought her claim to the Civil Resolution Tribunal, and without the help of a lawyer, on her own, beat the big bad ICBC. The Civil Resolution Tribunal found that under the regulations, you don't have to be living together. They've got two definitions. One is a married couple who are residing together, and the other definition is people who live in a marriage-like relationship for at least 2 years before the crash. And the CRT found that under the latter definition, you don't have to live together, and that ICBC trying to use any ambiguity to their benefit is dead wrong, that any ambiguity should go to provide coverage for crash victims, not the other way around. Now, here's the bad part of this story. It's great that the applicant won, but of that $400,000, almost none of it is punitive in nature. Basically, what the CRT ordered was that ICBC has to pay the money that they should have paid in the first place and made them pay interest for how much the applicant was shortchanged by not getting the money immediately. But In terms of consequences to ICBC, they only had to pay about $100, which was the filing fee back to the applicant. There weren't any punitive types of damages to ICBC. So you have a widow of a crash, ICBC denies hundreds of thousands of dollars of benefits. It gets dragged out for years as the CRT process plays out. And when they're told they're dead wrong, their only consequence is another extra hundred some odd dollars plus interest. It's not a great system, folks, but it's a good thing this applicant fought and won.
And if I wasn't mad enough after my conversation with Vision Zero advocates on Twitter, every time Eric talks about ICBC, it just reminds me of the injustice. And then I end up thinking that, you know, I'm even more mad. So
I've been thinking a lot lately about the problem we have with legislators provincially. So federal legislation is introduced and they debate it, and it's debated nationally for the most part. And then it goes to the Senate and it can be sent back and there can be fixes. And sometimes it doesn't pass because we have a minority government. But provincially, the provincial government, you know, puts a piece of legislation in. It's not going to be changed unless there's some glaring problem and we see the Motor Vehicle Act go in, and then it just ends up being passed. And that happens in every province right now. In Alberta, people are very concerned. Provincially, we have that issue as well. That's me some concern.
A great spot for us to transition into our next topic.
Which is?
Provincially, the government writes the law, and if there's some concern, it can be changed.
That's true.
Yes. Now, let's talk about possessing liquor in a motor vehicle.
Let's talk about it because Now that you're done coughing, let's talk about it because it's topical.
Yes, because the Vancouver Police Department, oracle of our legal system that they are on social media, recently tweeted out a bunch of very poorly designed infographics with Canucks colors in advance of game two of the round one of the Stanley Cup's Western Conference final playoffs games, because, of course, people are descending upon Rogers Arena to go to the game, and they're trying to stop people from, you know, committing offenses, like being drunk in a public place. And they tweeted out, if you're intoxicated in a public place, then you can be arrested and you can face a fine. And if you possess open liquor in a motor vehicle, you can face a $230 fine. See any problems with that, Paul?
There's lots of problems with that. First of all, I would say, generally speaking, we don't have a big problem, riots excluded, with people misbehaving going to Canucks games. And so I don't like the threat in Vancouver, no fun city. So I'm not happy to see it because it's a threat, right?
I'm a defender of the riot. The riot is a proud Canadian tradition.
Yes. Montreal, they've done it so many times.
It's cultural. It's the only culture we have.
Where was it?
Poutine riots.
We had it twice in Vancouver, twice in Montreal.
Twice in Vancouver and twice in Montreal.
There you go.
They don't riot in Alberta, but they don't count because they're basically Texas.
Well, Alberta basically is more than happy to give up their right to riot and give up their rights all over the place, apparently.
Yeah. Okay. But I will save my I'm proud to be a Canadian stump speech about how I think we should all be allowed the right to riot on game 7 of the last round of the Stanley Cup's playoffs.
Don't hurt anybody. Don't damage public property. Just, you know, jump up and down and scream.
Light a few police cars on fire.
No.
There should be a riot
Steve
fund.
Steve Quinn was talking about it the other day.
$1 added to every ticket sold to a Stanley Cup game to fund riot recovery efforts.
That would make perfect sense. Stephen Quinn mentioned it on CBC the other day, how, you know, jokingly about that they knew there was going to be a riot, just as you and I knew there was going to be a riot.
Everybody knows there's going to be a riot. There'll be a riot this year, too.
No, it's too recent. It's too raw. There's still people who remember. There's, you know, every of the rioters went to jail, right? Almost every.
Before 2011, the riots were 86, 93, and 95, I think.
In Vancouver? That many? No.
There were two in Vancouver and two in Montreal.
Yeah. Montreal. you know, they're entitled to riot.
Yeah, but Montreal.
Yeah, and you're right. Maybe this is maybe some Canadian thing.
Exactly.
But you know, the Vancouver police, rather than having police officers out there to discourage the riot, they're tweeting or what have you.
Yes, they're tweeting about open liquor in motor vehicles, something that has nothing to do with a riot. And while I have questions about how they're locating open liquor in motor vehicles in these circumstances, the bigger concern is that their tweet was factually inaccurate with respect to the law.
So tell me, because this is something that you pay attention to. Kyla reads the Motor Vehicle Act and commits it to memory.
Well, this is in liquor control license.
Kyla reads the liquor control and licensing.
And as a distiller, I'm required to know that.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
So the Liquor Control Licensing Act says that you cannot possess open liquor containers in a motor vehicle with a few exceptions. Obvious exception, if you have a permit. Because some people do, right? Like distillers, brewers, people who operate wineries might transport open liquor in the course of their duties related to their permit.
I
can think of very few circumstances where that would be necessary, but it might be
almost anything you permit. Do as a distiller, brewer, or wine person requires you to get pre-authorization
permits
beforehand, and you have to log onto their website, and their website will just have a spinning thing going on for the longest time. So good luck with that one.
Yeah. Number two is you can have open liquor in a motor vehicle, or liquor in a motor vehicle, if it is in sealed containers. Now, this is where I take issue with the police, because they don't clarify in their tweet sealed containers are permitted. They say open liquor, but for a lot of police officers, as you and I have seen countless times in our career, they interpret open to mean, oh, the box, your 24-pack of nudes is open and six are missing? Well, I'm going to pour out the 18 remaining.
A six-pack of Coors Light.
Yeah.
One's not there.
One's off the ring.
No,
that's open.
There. It's off the ring, yeah.
It's open.
It's open liquor in your vehicle.
That is not it.
We're confiscating it.
And I have seen I have personally read about thousands of dollars of alcohol that has been poured out into city streets across this province.
Well, that's the worst thing, is that the alcohol's been wasted. And, you know, how do the fish feel? The fish don't want it. Yeah, alcohol shouldn't necessarily be just going down the drain either.
Tax to manufacture it, tax to buy it.
Yeah, excise, provincial tax.
Yeah, so many taxes just down the drain.
Yeah, and all that alcohol, I mean, you can probably...
tax dollars for that officer's time to sort.
As someone with knowledge of distilling, you know that you could just walk around a bar at the end of the night, take all those glasses, pour them all together, probably redistill it, and get yourself a 2-6.
So what you're saying is we should open a bar and really enforce last call like that.
Sudden last call.
The third exception is if the liquor containers are open. So you open a bottle of wine, you drink half of it, you get in the back seat of an Uber, and you put your wine bottle sealed up, but still open, seal broken, but, you know, some sort of lid on it so it doesn't spill, in the trunk. As long as the open liquor is out of reach of the passengers and the driver of the motor vehicle, it's lawful.
Well, you can't fit that in a tweet, though, so I forgive them for that.
You can fit it in an infographic, and that's what they created.
Okay.
And if you're creating a graphic, you can include the exceptions. You just have to be a better artist.
Anytime I'm, like, doing a TikTok or posting a tweet that could be partially considered marketing, I often wonder, oh my gosh, how can I include all of the exceptions and things like that? I worry about that. I can't do it. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. The Vancouver police are not perfect. It was worse, though, when Anne Drennan was their spokesperson, because she, I remember, threatening people that they were just going to search their backpacks and search their pockets and search anything if they came down to
that,
to the fireworks. And that was not good. Anyway, I mean, okay, Vancouver police, I have my issues with you. I'm not as angry about it as Kyla. Are you angry?
I'm not angry, no.
Okay.
I just wish that if you're going to put information out there for the purposes of educating the public, that you provide complete and accurate information. And it's not hard to do, because I recorded a TikTok as soon as I saw that. And in 3 minutes, I was able to provide complete and accurate information.
Well, that's the thing. That's you. They should hire you on a contract basis to do that.
Hire me
for you.
I would charge them $100,000 per year, which is probably well within their grossly inflated City of Vancouver budget. So
yeah, There you go. So long as you only had to work a few hours because you don't have any extra time.
I'll just create content for them, send it to them on a Sunday, 100 grand in the bank.
There you go.
Quit the rest of my work.
There you go. Meanwhile, the rest of us are trying to figure out how to scrape some money to gather to buy a dozen eggs.
Good Lord, could you believe that if the Vancouver Police Department actually took me up on this offer and I had to add that to my list of work?
Yeah, you'd be conflicted.
Yeah, I would have a problem.
You'd be conflicted.
All right, Paul, it's time for
the Ridiculous Driver of the Week. The week.
The reviews are in. This book has been a lifesaver. If you haven't bought a copy yet, I can't recommend it enough. Thanks to the Pinpoint Method, I feel like I now have concrete strategies I can employ for difficult situations. Published by LexisNexis, Cross-Examination: The Pinpoint Method is an essential addition to your bookshelf. Order now.
And, I mean, to some extent, we've already kind of had a ridiculous driver because we talked about the person who crashed their car into a building in Vancouver.
But there's too many ridiculous drivers of the week right now.
But this one is so good. This one that you found in Saskatoon.
Oh, I know. And we've also touched on this topic already today. So go ahead. Tell us about it. Pulled over by the police in Saskatoon.
Yeah. They must have had that same defective vehicle that our client had because it had no steering wheel.
And so this driver had attached a pair of vice grips onto the steering column and was driving the vehicle with a pair of vice grips. And I have to tell you, back when I was 17, I probably considered doing that. I probably thought about doing it.
I don't even understand how that works.
Well, I mean, the steering shaft or column is just a column. It's a metal column. And the steering wheel slides onto the column with splines on it, like gears that match a gear.
Right.
It's not twisting against itself. It's a sliding in onto itself.
Right, but vice grips are like a needle.
No, there's needle nose vice grips, but there's also big wide vice grips. There's all different types. And so you can grab onto something fairly big with a pair of vice grips. And if you put two pairs of vice grips on there, you'd be like driving a motorcycle or an airplane or something like that. This person.
What you're saying is it's really not unsafe.
Oh, really not unsafe. Oh, my gosh. First of all, controlling the vehicle. Yeah, you could do it. If you've got an old 70s car with like that very loose power steering that they used to have. I mean, my dad used to drive with one finger all the time. You know, he'd have his drink, one finger and his cigarette. Going at all times and half the time driving with his knee. I'm not alcohol drink. I never, not any time I ever saw him, but he was a careful guy, generally law abiding, although he always used to say, just, you know, I like to just get a little bit in there sometimes. but in any event, you could drive one of those old cars probably with a pair of vice grips, but you know, you got a javelin staring, you know, and pointing right at your chest, basically, and you can't control the vehicle. Hilarious, though. The photograph is there. Saskatchewan is the new Florida. It's not anything really like Florida, but Saskatchewan, man, that can be the new one, I guess.
Well, I guess if you have replaced your steering wheel with vice grips and gotten into some driving related trouble, you can give us a call at 604-685-8889. I feel like that's a very non-specific call to action to end this podcast.
I don't think anybody's going to call us with that. But if you have any driving, any police connected driving thing, phone us. If your friends do, they can call us too.
Or you can find us online at vancouvercriminallaw.com and tune in next week for another exciting episode of Driving Law.